Good.
All right. Thank you for joining us today for the next session in our series, Not Everything is Online, Consult Your Local Archives, class sponsored by the Iowa Genealogical Society. Today, we welcome two ladies from the Iowa State University Library Special Collections and Archives Group. Just a few housekeeping issues before we get started. In the lower left corner, as we've been experimenting, are both buttons for microphone and video icons. Please turn your microphones off during the class. If you have a question, the ladies will take them after their presentation. So if you don't want to forget it, you can put it in chat and we'll bring it up at that time. Closed captioning is available. I better turn that on. Let's see. Let me find it so I can turn it on, captions. Okay. That should be working. All right, let me get some more people in. And we will be recording this session and the links will be available once the video has been processed by a person. So let me introduce our speakers today. Our first speaker is Olivia Garrison. She's a reference coordinator in the Special Collections and the University Archives at Iowa State University. In this role, she has helped many people find information about their friends and relatives who spent time at Iowa State. Our second speaker is Lori Pellock, is the head of Research Services Department at University Library. She's and also an amateur part-time genealogist, welcome to the fold, and maintains the ISU Library Genealogy Guide. Her family came to the United States mostly from Prussia or Germany and settled in Kansas in the early pioneer days. So with that, I'll turn it over to Olivia.
Hello, excuse me, thank you for having me today. So I'm gonna go ahead and share my screen. Okay. Zoom is going to make stuff come up and make it difficult for me here to get to presentation mode.
Sometimes if you just click the slideshow button.
There we go. Thank you. Okay, so genealogy and the archives, researching your family history. There is our general contact there, archives@iustate.edu. Someone is always available to answer that email, and I'll also include my personal email at the end. A quick agenda. So first I'll go over some resources for those who have an Iowa State connection, and then some other Iowa resources. And I think a lot of that will blend nicely into Lori's presentation. So where to access resources? Some are only available by visiting, I'll use just SCUA as a shortcut for Special Collections and University Archives. Anyone can visit. It's a misconception sometimes that you have to be somehow affiliated with the university, either an alumni or current student, but that is not true. That's part of the land grant mission. So anyone is welcome. Currently, our hours are 10 to 4, Monday through Thursday. There's no appointment necessary. You're welcome to just come on up to the fourth floor of the Parks Library. But we understand that for any number of reasons, people might not be able to visit. So for brief questions, we can answer by email. More in-depth research we may or may not be able to do, but certainly contact us and we can see what we can do. We can make photocopies of documents to send, depending on the item. Of course, there are some copyright restrictions. So certain things we can't send. And then there may be fees involved depending on the volume of the documents we send. Up to 20 pages is free though, so that's nice. And then there are some documents that are available in person and online. I think Sherry sent out a handout I had made with some URLs that will show up in the presentation. Okay, so I'm going to start with the university directories. The time span that these were printed is 1901 to 2010. Information included names of staff, students, and faculty. their department major, obviously the department they were teaching in, if they were faculty, their home city, state, country. Usually if they're from Iowa, it would just list a city, and then not from Iowa, list a state, and then certainly out of the United States would list a country. Includes their campus address and their year in school, so freshman, sophomore, et cetera, et cetera. These are not digitized yet. This is something I'm really pushing for because it is extremely helpful. I consult them daily, so I would love to be able to make these more accessible. So hopefully that will be coming. But for now, that is something that you would need to come to the archives to see, or have us look through those for you. And then we have the university catalogs. These, the date printed that we have, at least 1880 to 2013. These are all available digitally, which is nice. You can't do a search across them. You need to download each individual issue before you can do a search in them. So a little caveat there. This is a good resource for finding those students and graduates for before 1901, when the directories were printed. As you can see, I apologize, the picture is sort of small, but they list the graduates from before that date. And then for that school year, they would list everyone who's, again, freshman, sophomore, junior, et cetera. They stopped listing the current students in the after the 1918-1919 school year, but by then the directory was well established, so it should be able to cover that information. There's also just sort of general interesting information in the catalogs, such as, I mean, obviously, naturally, it lists the courses and, you know, what you would need to graduate, you know, with whatever degree, but it also has things like library hours, student regulations. There's whatever they list for the hospital, university, or the college hospital every year is always really interesting. So anyway, just general information about, of course, what would have been the college early on and the university now, is in there. And then also in the university catalogs would list those participating in the short courses. So for instance, a short course in dairying, things like that, that may or may not show up in the directories. So that's a good place to find someone who didn't necessarily get a four-year degree, or like, you know, bachelor's, master's, things like that. And then we have the BOM, which is the name of the yearbook. So the entire run is available digitally, which is great. It ran from 1894 to 1994. Generally, before 1925, you're going to find more information about someone their junior year because the juniors put together the yearbook. After that, you're going to find them in their senior year. So if they graduated in 1960, you're going to want to look in that yearbook. This is most often the only source of photos for individual students. We do have a small collection of photos of individuals separately, but this is going to be your best shot. As you can see in the picture, every graduate, I mean, depending on the year, because of course the yearbook changes in a 100-year time span, but it would list the senior and their clubs and things like that, which can offer more avenues for further research and more places to look for photos of them in that yearbook. Alumni files. So this is something that is strictly available in person. There is limited coverage. These are files that came to us from the Alumni Association, I want to say in the 70s, and they have been added to since. While it's certainly not inclusive, it's not going to be every graduate who was ever here. And it consists largely of news clippings. You can search Cardinal, which is our catalog, to find what names do have an alumni file. So that is something you can look up in advance before visiting the archives. And like I said, not available digitally. But this is something that would be a good candidate for copying and sending you a PDF file, because most alumni files aren't super thick. So they would fall under that 20-page threshold before any fees would take hold. More information for the early classes, like 1920 and earlier, roughly. So we would have class reunion records. As you can see in that photo, I don't know if it's on your left, but the larger photo, they would list where the alumni currently lived at the time of the reunion. Often it would list their spouse, children, sometimes current job, things like that. We also have the commencement programs. I'll explain the caveat in a second. So obviously that lists the graduates for any given year. So the caveat to that, it is not an official record, because the commencement programs had to be printed before the final grades would have been in for that last semester. So it, depending on your use, they could be sufficient, certainly. But the only place you can get an official record of graduates is through the registrar, because they would have a record of if they did actually meet the requirements to graduate. Again, for those early classes, there will be reunion photos. As you can see in this photo, this box contains information on the class of 1910 to 1917 via their reunions. So, you know, it could be, you know, again, most likely that class of 1917, 50 years out. but that's a good place to find photos for them. And then, of course, we have faculty so there will be personnel files for a lot of faculty, not everyone, but a lot of them. We would have headshots, particularly of anyone who was here in the mid to late 20th century. And then collections of their individual papers, depending on the person. If we're more likely to have their papers, if it's someone like Marston, who you've probably heard of, if you have anything to do with the university. But to find what names we have, again, you can search Cardinal to know what we have before you would make that visit. finding photos. So there are some digitized photos that obviously you can't click this link, but it should be on that sheet that I sent out. And then there are some exhibits that have photos that you can see, and you can see past and present exhibits. There should be websites for those. Print photos is going to be the lion's share of what we have that are not digitized yet. There is an inventory in Cardinal soon. I think some of the inventory is there, but it's not there entirely, but it should be coming soon. I think it's written. It might just not be uploaded yet. But then I have a link for print photos, because that is a website as part of our website that lists what we have photos of broadly. And then just generally with archives, you can fall down a rabbit hole. One thing's going to lead to the next. As you research whoever you're interested in, you're going to find new places to look. So just a few examples, and there are, you know, countless examples. Sports media guides, if they were an athlete at all while they were here, are a good place to look. Club or activity records, anyone can tell you there's going to be any number of different groups and organizations, with niche interests that you might be able to find more information on that person through them. Greek organizations, of course, if they were involved in that at all, would be another place to look. I just love that picture of the swan boat in Lake Laverne during Vesha, just with all that smoke coming out of it. So coming soon, I'm very excited about this. The entire print run of the Iowa State Daily, which started in 1890, has been digitized. It is not yet accessible to the public. We're hoping fall 2023, but that is going to be very exciting. But for now, since they are all digitized, you can contact the archives, and we are happy to send PDF copies of specific issues. I just thought this was interesting. I pulled this. This is the front page from December 9th, 1941. So, you know, 2 days after the attack on Pearl Harbor. So anyway, I just thought that was interesting. But yes, that will be available soon. Yeah. So people without an ISU connection, what do we have in the archives? So we do have some county histories. There are many more in the general collection, and I think Lori might possibly touch on that. We do have family and personal papers. There's the Adams family and then various diaries. There are some Civil War diaries, some, you know, farm life diaries, but other avenues. It's worth, you know, searching whatever names you have in our collection, and, you know, you never know what you might come up with. We also have organization history and papers, organizations that have things to do with the strengths of the university. So agriculture, of course, engineering, life sciences. So just a couple of more concrete examples. Like, we have papers from the National Farmers Organization and the Association of Women Geoscientists, just to name a couple of a vast collection. So you never know who might have been involved in those things. You would find more information about them in our papers. I want to make a quick note about Iowa State University versus the State University of Iowa and the distinction there, because it gets confused a lot, very understandably. People will find that their grandfather, whoever, wrote a thesis and it says, you know, State University of Iowa, which of course you think must be Iowa State University, but it's not. So when the University of Iowa was founded, it is legally, well, to this day, the State University of Iowa. In 1964, the Board of Regents said that they can colloquially go by the University of Iowa. And of course, when Iowa State University was founded, it was the Iowa Agricultural College and Model Farm. There have been a few names over the years, but it was not a university until July 4th of 1959. So if you're finding things before that date and they say university, it's probably going to be University of Iowa. Some other obvious clues, if they have any sort of medical degree, unless it's to do with animals, that's going to be University of Iowa. If you have any questions, feel free to ask us. We get this all the time, and I'm happy to clear up and point you to the right place, depending on what the right place might be. Okay, so I can take any questions or comments. There is my direct email and then the department email, which I'll be honest, I'm the one most likely to answer that as well. But if I'm ever gone for whatever reason, someone is always checking that. So,
well, we don't have any questions in chat. So go ahead and turn on your mics and ask all of you your questions.
I have a question.
Sure.
I live in Altoona, and in 1923, a family here in town planted the first commercially sold hybrid seed corn. One whole acre sold for $1 a bag, whatever. Anyway, we are celebrating the 100th anniversary in Iowa, July the 4th. We're having a carnival, not a carnival, a carnival. I'm looking for the Kurtzwell family, and I know that some of them, there were, I think, three brothers that I know of that attended Iowa State. I don't know if there were more. And I'm just bubbling over with, looks like there's lots of nooks and crannies.
Yes.
To be looking. This eventually evolved into Pioneer Hybrid Seed Corn. And that's why I'm really curious as to what happened, because this happened in the 30s when they became Pioneer Hybrid, working with Henry Wallace and another gentleman. I can't think of his name right at the moment. Where do you recommend I start?
We are probably, as you suspect, going to have a lot of information that is useful to you. I would either start by looking up the specific names you have, although students aren't as likely to show up that way. So you can certainly email the archives with that name and we can let you know sort of what years and things to start with. And then if you...
The name, it happens to be George M. Kurzweil. He was there in 23. He got his bachelor's there. He went on to Minnesota, got his master's. And I found a blurb in something that his picture was posted in the agronomy department because of his developing, you know, not just seed corn or corn seeds, but other things he developed. I mean,
sure.
I'm doing some historical research for our historical society here in town. And so unbelievable, the people and the skills that they had. There were 13 kids. And of course, the boys all went to college. And the older sisters worked in the business and they maintained the homestead. And eventually, the younger ones went on to college then. You know, they were just a fascinating family.
Yeah.
But my focus is the seed corn. Mm-hmm. Also, Iowa State had requested their papers, so the family turned over the papers to Iowa State somewhere, of their Iowa Seed Corn Company.
Okay. Yeah, so I would start searching on that Cardinal database, which I believe is cardinal.lib.iastate.edu. I'll get the URL for sure and put it in the chat. While Lori's talking, just to make sure I have it correct. And then after that, if you're having trouble, you can email us and see if we can come up with any other keywords or anything like that. But yes, that's where I would start that search.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay. Luann's put a question in the chat. Do you have any information on plowing contests? My great-grandfather attended one before he passed in 1906. Apparently, this 70-year-old man showed the younger men how to plow a straight furrow. She thought they were held in Ames, but she didn't know.
We might. I don't know anything off the top of my head. I should also mention, for things that were happening in Ames, the Ames Historical Society is also a good place to look. I can't speak much about their collection, but that is certainly another place to contact. So that would be something I can look up, but I do not know definitively. Okay.
Any other questions for Olivia?
Okay. So I'm curious, you know, is this, should I be coming to the library, or should I take my chances and see what we come up with and then worry about going to the library? Whatever.
I think it's a good strategy to see if it would be worth your time first. Okay. And then a trip up is probably going to be helpful. While of course we're digitizing new things all the time, it's, you know, not the majority of what we have.
Okay, very good. I'll take it from there. Thank you.
All right. Any final questions? All right. With that, I'll turn it over to Lori.
Okay. A minute here while I do the same thing. Okay. There.
Looks good.
Okay. So sort of on a public service announcement, more or less, is the reason I'm giving my part of the session here. building on what Olivia said already about the archives, we also have a pretty large collection of things beyond the archive that might be of interest to genealogists. I've provided the URL to our genealogy guide, and I'm the one who maintains it. Based roughly on most of the questions that we get, we put a lot of content in there, including things that we don't actually own, but we may refer to someone else who we know does provide things that you might be of interest related to Iowa and genealogy. And I want to start with really why you might care to use the university library beyond what Olivia's already told you, in part because there are a lot of materials that are not online yet, right? We are open to the public. We encourage people from anywhere to walk into our front door and use our collections. You don't have to be ISU affiliated. We're happy to hand you a guest login at the main desk and say, go for it, right? So it's very handy. You don't have to have a visitor's card to check out material. If you end up wanting to check out a lot of books, you might want to get a visitor's card, but you don't need one, certainly, to just come in and use our computers. You can also use our free scanners, which are very handy. One of the reasons I like to encourage the use of our collection beyond archives is because we have a lot of materials that are related to history. And if you start and think about how you might flesh out your family story beyond just who's related to who and when they were born kinds of things, are things like events that occurred during the time they were alive. Why did they migrate? Were there major weather events that caused deaths in the family, right? Biographies. A wide range of things, and almost anything that you can find in our general collection outside of archives is something that can be checked out, or you can scan pages that are relevant to you and save those and take with you. Some examples, and these are literally just a sampling to get you thinking. These are all things that are available in hard copy in our building that, to my knowledge, are not existing electronically at this point. Now, that's every time I give this, I always have to go check the titles again just to see have they become available electronically. But Soldier Registers is a series of books that are being published by a specific publisher. They cover all of the U.S. states and I believe a few Canadian ones. And you can just look up in quick search for soldier registers and pick your state, right? And it will come up with a variety of rosters from various wars that the US was involved in and different regiments from different states. So it's kind of handy and kind of hidden in our collection, if you will. A few other things that people don't often think about. Gravestone art. We actually have an ISU thesis that was specifically related to the Story County historic gravestone art. So if you have gravestones in Story County, you might want to look for that in our collection. I love the things related to weather. And I have to stop at this point and actually give you sort of an anecdote. As I'm working with researchers and finding materials for what they want in our collection, I often stumble across other things that are amazing. And one of mine was a question that got me into the county history books that we have, most of which are available online now. But nearby are other things related to the history of Iowa. We also have a lot of other materials related to, say, the history of the surrounding states, as well as other U.S. states. So it's not just Iowa stuff that's in our collection. But we have a book called Iowa Through the Years, and I'm going to read this because I think it's very phenomenal. A short quote from the book. It said that in Iowa history, the years 1849, 1850, and 1851 are known as the wet years. In 1849, the rainfall was 59 inches. In 1850, it was 49 inches. And in 1851, it was almost 75 inches of rain. This was one of the major factors in migration in and out of Iowa during this time period. You couldn't plant your crops because everything is flooded. So a lot of people were going hungry. After the first year, a lot of people left the state and went elsewhere. A number of others died in 1850 and 51 because the disease that was rampant from all of the standing water. So the ague or the shaking fever was the cause of death for a lot of people in 1850 and 1851. This is the kind of thing that you wouldn't normally find on a death certificate. You might find an account in a newspaper, but we also had a lot of people who migrated into Iowa shortly after that because Iowa decided they needed to promote all this land that is now available because people had left the state, right? So these are the kinds of stories that you can find by just looking up history of the region over time. We do have several books that talk about weather in the state. Tornado is a great book. It's a fat set that talks about every year. You can look up by year, you can look up by location, you can look up by city to see when they happened, how many people were killed or how many people were injured, the amount of damage, did it graze the town or did it, you know, full on hit, that sort of thing. So our general collection has a pretty wide range of materials that could enhance what you know about your family history a little bit more. The birth certificate and family secrets books are fairly new published books. The birth certificate one is pretty fascinating. They show pictures of how the birth certificates have changed over time throughout America. And you get a much closer and easier read of them than what you can on some of the microfiche that we get when we request a birth certificate. For example, you can't always tell what the words are on the form. And I think it's very cool. Keeping family secrets is about things that you won't find written down anywhere. If there were people who were institutionalized in the family, right? If there were siblings who were set up for adoption, all sorts of things like that. So it's kind of a fun sidebar when you're doing genealogy, at least it is for me. So quick search, I've put a hot link in here. This is our search box on the library homepage, essentially, is how you look for books that we have in the collection. And you can find any of these in there and many others just by playing around a little bit with a geographic area or a town and things like that. Some of the weird things we have in our collection, I discovered by scrolling down the shelves of the genealogy section, if you will. These are the ones that are actually classified in our catalog as vital records or immigration kinds of books, and they classify in the C section of the call number. We have weird stuff, I'm just saying it. I don't know how we have it or why we have it, but we have Barbados marriage records for a certain time period. It's a really short time period. It's only their marriage records, but we've got it. I would just encourage you to play around with quick search and see what you can find in our collection. We have a lot from England. We have a lot from Germany. For Greece, we actually have Athenian records. Think about that for a minute, right? That's ancient. So it really varies what you'll find in our collection. But if you can find it in quick search, if it says it's in the general collection, you are welcome to either come get a visitor's card and check it out, or you could request it from your local library on interlibrary loan, because our general collection does go out the door. It's not, you don't have to come here to see it. You can actually request some of this stuff on interlibrary loan. And sort of on the heels of what Olivia mentioned earlier about visiting the library, I'd encourage you to check our homepage. We prominently have a link to our hours on the page, and you can look ahead if you know you're gonna be here, say in May 15th after graduation, you can check and see what our hours are for those days before you come. I encourage you to bring a flash drive because you can use our computers and download materials that you find there onto a flash drive, or if you find materials in our collection and you'd like to scan them, you can either save it to a flash drive or you can send it to whatever email address you supply into the keyboard on the scanner, and it will send those to you electronically. So if you think about it, okay, I have to admit this, I'm a genealogist, I have family photos, I brought them in and I scanned them, okay? It's not copyrighted, they're family pictures. And I now have an electronic version that I can send to all my cousins, right? So the drawback to using our scanners is they're really busy at the beginning of the semester. So when classes start, the students are using them full time. I really think the best time to visit is going to be during class breaks, whether it's the semester break in December, January, spring break. Summertime is actually fairly non-busy comparatively. I think our biggest challenge really is parking. We do have some metered parking about a block away near the armory. The Memorial Union has a parking garage. It's not free, but it's within a couple of blocks walk from the library. And normally I would recommend parking over by the football stadium. North of the football stadium, there's a bus station and a free shuttle bus to campus and back. It's under construction at the moment, so that might not be a good thing for, say, this summer. But there are some options there, at least. And last but not least, some overlooked free resources. These are things I've used myself and I've helped other people use, and they've gotten really excited when they use some of them. Some of them you've probably already used. The historical newspapers by Advantage Preservation, a lot of genealogists already are aware of that. I happen to like it because it does a lot of rural town newspapers, which I have not been able to access in the past. Farmfield and Fireside is actually hosted by the University of Illinois, and they are digitized newspapers from around the Midwest, and you can specify which newspaper you want it to search, or you can just search the whole collection. They are OCR scanned and keyword searchable throughout the full text, which is really handy. If you have a fairly uncommon surname, I would just type in the surname of whoever you're interested in. But you can also see what was going on in the region. Were there a lot of auctions going on because there was suddenly something that caused a lot of farmers to go bankrupt? You get a bigger picture of that often through the newspapers. And then land office records are something I already knew about and have for many years as a genealogist. However, FamilySearch.org also now has individual state land record pages that list not only the general land office as a source, but any other sources that are known for those records and the time periods they covered, and hot links out to them. So I had a question recently from someone in Texas who was looking for information, and it turned out the Texas land records on the Family Search site answered their question. They just didn't realize there was such a thing. So just a little heads up. And then HathiTrust is a full text resource for a lot of really old materials, as well as newer ones. But the older ones are usually free of copyright, or they're in the public domain because they've gone out of copyright. So you can often search the full text of digitized books. So all those county history books that a lot of you probably use, the county history, Lincoln County, Kansas history from the early 1900s, they're all out of copyright at this point, and you can full text search those within HathiTrust. Save scanning through page after page of some of those old books if you can just keyword search them. And then the genealogy research guide that we have at ISU, I've hot linked here as well. So you can play around with that a little bit and see what you can find that may or may not be useful. And then last but not least, we offer, Olivia already mentioned this earlier, you can contact archives directly, or the reference librarian in the main part of the library offer an Ask Us service. And I'm gonna jump out to it real quick and let me see, hold on a minute. Whoops, let me share the other screen real quick. Okay, so our Ask Us service, I'm going to scroll down just a little bit. So this is the library homepage. We have an hours page right at the top where you can click and see today's, tomorrow's, down the road, what are our hours, right? We have an Ask Us button in the middle of the page, which is the page you're looking at the moment here for options. Our chat service is staffed from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. So you can talk to us live, or you can send us an email. If you click on live chat in the bottom right corner on a lot of library web pages is this live chat button. If it's being staffed and open, it will say live chat. If it's not currently staffed, it will say that it's closed. But if you click on it, another window opens up, and I don't know if you can. Did that just show up, Olivia? The pop-up? No, I was afraid of that. It will pop up with a window where you can type in your name. If you want, it's optional to self-identify who you are. You don't have to. And then just ask your question of the librarian that's sitting there. And it may be that they answer with a resource they know about already. They may refer you to the genealogy page. They might refer you to archives. But also they have the option to take down your information and your question and refer it to a librarian who might know the answer and get back to you later. So sometimes they can answer it pretty immediately if it's a quick factual kind of question. And other times they may need to refer it to someone else. But it's an easy way to ask for help. And we don't care who's asking. You don't have to have an ISU affiliation at all to use our service. If you want to check books out of the ISU library, you do need a visitor's card, which just means you have to be a resident of Iowa. And it is a $25 fee. So I don't tend to encourage people to get one unless they really think they're going to be checking out a lot of books. So that's all I have for my presentation. Other questions?
Okay. We don't have any new questions in the chat, so I would encourage everybody just open up your mics and ask your questions. Go ahead, Gail.
Yeah, you said it's $25 for a membership, a library card. How long is the card good for?
A year.
Okay, thank you.
So a question I've got then is, you said there was a way to get a visitor's card versus this. You kind of said there were two options. You could use a card and then get the card.
Oh, sorry. It's all the same. Okay. We do offer any Iowa resident the option to get a visitor's card. Some people call it a borrower's card. It has a couple different names. It's just like a library card for anyone who's not ISU. And you just go to the main desk and say you're interested in one. And they have you fill out a form, and it costs $25 a year.
Now, if you use interlibrary loan to request a book, do you have to pay the $25 fee?
No. If you're using interlibrary loan at your library, they may have a fee. Some libraries do charge for that, but our books can be lent out to other libraries if it's one that's in our regular checkout collection desk.
Any other questions? Go ahead, Amy.
I'm wondering, does ISU have specialty libraries? I'm thinking particularly in, say, architecture. I have a family history question. There's a story in our family that our grandparents' home in Calmer, Iowa, won a national award for landscape architecture. And this would have been sometime between like 1917 and 1930. And so I'm trying to research that and find that award. And I'm just wondering what resources ISU might possibly have.
Olivia, is that likely your area?
So as far as specialty libraries, limited. There is the design library, and I will be wholly honest that I don't know everything that's there. Maybe Laura could speak more to that. And then there's the vet med library. But we tend not to have branches for the most part for specific subjects.
It might depend on who sponsored the award, right? If it was an ISU related program that held the award held the award program, then we might have it in our collections. If it was done by like a national association, maybe not.
Okay.
The newspaper around that time period, a newspaper article might give more information about who awarded it, but.
I've been searching newspapers and just haven't come up with anything. So it might just be a family myth. Although I've seen the photos and the art, the landscape was beautiful. So.
Any other questions?
I thought of something to mention while Lori was talking. So we also have a scanner in Special Collections, and you are welcome to take photos with your camera, phone, whatever, as long as there's no flash. It's kind of up to you to determine copyright issues that may come up. But as far as we're concerned, we're not worried about materials if you want to take photos. And, you know, more than likely, if you're using them for your own private research, you're not really going to run into copyright issues. It would be if you want to publish them, which is probably not a huge concern of the people in this Zoom.
This is Linda Wallen. I saw that you had some Civil War information. Is that for just one particular division of troops in the Civil War?
So as far as what we have in Special Collections, we have diaries of a few specific individuals. So it's sort of even more of a microcosm than that.
Okay, yeah. Thanks.
Anybody else? Okay. Well, I thank Olivia and Lori. This has been really informative. I guess I didn't even realize that the library was open to Iowans without having an affiliation. So that's always a good piece of information to know.
We actually just had a researcher the other day from Oxford. So not even just Iowans, whoever around the globe.
Well, that's always
information of your neighbors. I mean, there's a lot of people who just really don't realize that we not only are accessible, we encourage it. So we do try to make it easier where we can for people that we know are planning to visit.
Okay. Well, thanks again. Any last questions? I'm not seeing any. We really appreciate you guys taking the time to inform us, and I will get an email out to everybody when the video is available. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you. Been good. Thank you.
It was excellent. Thanks a lot.
Yes, thank you very much. I enjoyed it very much.